Who's Nijinsky? Jack asked. Someone who could dance around women pretty well, too. I'm fine, Jack answered. The stories exposing the tribe made a big splash around the whole world. Or so I'm told. Did you see any of the stories on GCN? You know we don't have cable at the farm, but I've been reading about your stories in the press. I'm proud of you. You didn't do any on-camera work, did you? What do you mean? They didn't show you pictures of you, did they? No, they wanted to, bad enough. In the vein of young reporter risks himself. I didn't let them. Some of your principles have gotten through to me, you know. Oh, your mama taught you well. But gee, Daddy, it really crimps the vanity, you know. I could have been a celebrity. I'm sure. As the preacher said to his daughter, save yourself, there's always tomorrow. Yeah, I had a date with her once. Speaking of people who don't put out, I just met your Mr. Blair. Alex Blair? He's a jerk. Gee, Dad, and I thought he was real nice. I'm sure you did. Such a sincere man. As sincere as a snake on a rock stirring his tail in the water. He gave me a nice big check. I see. Driving through rural Wisconsin, Fletch was trying to find a road sign for the town of Forward. That means GCN didn't offer you a job. It's a very generous check. Bastards. Which also means you didn't let them know you're my son. In the van by himself, Fletch smiled. Isn't that right? Gee, Dad, am I your son? Until further notice. You're not going to make me submit to DNA tests? Jack asked. I hate the question. I don't even know why you'd want to be my son. Your mother raised you, filling you up with all kinds of lies about me. All I've ever done is write a book you don't like much. Well, I look at it this way, Jack said. You still have an opportunity to turn out well. Just maybe with my good influence on you. You intend to reform me at this point? Good luck. Hey, I might even teach you one or two things about journalism. What are you going to do now that GCN has given you your walking papers? Visit an old girlfriend in Georgia. How close an old girlfriend? She's getting married to someone else. The best kind. We only spent a very short weekend together once. Very short. I've got the picture. You were at the Heartbreak Motel. So why are you showing up in her life now that she's getting married? Can't you stand any rejection at all? She's invited me. She thinks there's something weird about her boyfriend's family. Isn't there always? Few are the brides who realize it in time. You're investigating the in-laws for her? Something like that. Why? Doesn't sound like there's a story there. Does there always have to be a story? You've got to keep yourself in Pepsi and Pizza Boy. You haven't asked me who her in-laws are. Who? Professor and Mrs. Chester Radley. Oh, yes, I see. He who invented the perfect mirror. Georgia. Isn't he the guy that built that crazy place? Vindemia. That's where I'm going. I see. I guess I wouldn't mind meeting the guy who invented the wheel. To collect characters for the long ride, Jack quoted. Isn't that what I'm supposed to say at this point? Geez, kid, you're stealing all my best lines. It might be interesting, don't you think? For some reason, Shauna thinks the professor's life is in danger. If it doesn't work out, come back to Priory Farm, will you? Carrie insists she likes you and wouldn't mind having you around for a while. Besides, the fences always need painting. We can offer you minimum wage, a shed to sleep in, and a bath on Saturdays. Nah, Jack said. As father and son, we've grown too close. Sure, Fletch said. I've seen you two or three times now, spent hours with you. It's not the quantity of time we spend together, it's the quality. Well, Fletch spotted the sign for Forward and slowed the van for a left turn. You sure got my attention the few days we spent together. How's Carrie? Didn't I just say she's crazy? She likes you. She loves me. Just wanted you to know where I'll be, Jack said. Tell my mother, please. Sure, Fletch said, turning the van left at the intersection. Call if you find work. You want to go have lunch? Andy Sist asked. Yeah, John Fletcher Fayoni answered. We might as well go to the employees' dining room. Lasagna is the special today. No, Jack said. I want an Italian submarine sandwich. Where are you going to get that? Subs Rosa. Where's that? North Carolina. Huh? Jack shook Andy's hand. It's been fun. Thanks for all your help. Blair didn't give you a job? He gave me what he called fatherly advice. To wit, get lost. Hey, Jack, Andy called after him. Will I see you again? Walking toward the exit of Global Cable News, Jack turned and waved at Andy. Jack sang, maybe when I learn not to end a sentence with a proposition. Chapter 4.
Tell me who the bastard is now, Crystal demanded through clenched jaws at the sight of Fletch.
She was lying on the big bed in what had been her room on the second floor of Blythe's Spirit. There were no pillowcases, sheets, blankets on the bed. There was no curtain around the bed. She was an enormous mound of mostly useless flesh in an outsized nightgown and bathrobe. To Fletch, she looked as helpless, vulnerable as someone lying in the middle of a highway after a car wreck. Except through a curtain the week before, Fletch had not seen Crystal in years. When he had entered the room, he was physically shocked by her mammoth size. Fletch exhaled.
Hi.
They've even taken the lamps, Crystal said. The reading lamps.
Yeah, this is a busy old place today. There were cars, station wagons, ambulances, trucks, some of them with official insignias on their doors, crammed in Blythe Spirit's horseshoe driveway. Files were being wheeled out of the administration offices downstairs on dollies. He cleared his throat.
Let me take you away from all this.
I'm not going anywhere with you, Crystal snapped. You put the law on us. Your damned report on Global Cable News.
You know I'm right.
I know no such thing. These people were taking care of me.
These people were keeping you handicapped so they could pick your pockets.
Where's Jack?
Virginia, I was just talking to him.
Is he coming?
No, he's on his way to Georgia.
What did he say to you?
Fletch smiled. He told me to be careful not to let you fall on me again. After looking at Fletch a moment from the bed, Crystal laughed.
This time I'd crush you to death.
Flatter than a manhole cover.
Oh, you both bastards, father and son. I shouldn't have let one of you know the other existed. Get out of here. Who needs you?
You do.
I don't.
Okay. What are your plans? On her bed, Crystal raised her arm and dropped it in an impatient gesture. Watching her, Fletch realized the woman was so fat she probably could not sit up without help.
You have no responsibility for me, she muttered.
I know. Softly, Fletch said, but I told you Sunday I'd be back. He continued to stand halfway between the bed and the door to the hall.
Yeah, Crystal said. You sneak in here as a reporter, spy on me, spy on the people taking care of me, blow the story on Global Cable News, cause every law enforcement agency, health agency, and tin-whistled politician to lay siege to this place, get everybody from the cook to the secretary in the office indicted, get the place closed down in hours, and here I am, stranded on this bed, unable to move, with nothing to eat all morning, I might add, without even a tissue to throw at you. You came back all right. You're back like the second half of a hurricane on a seaside resort.
Fletch grinned. Haven't lost your fight anyway.
Why didn't Jack come?
Oh, I suspect he's giving us a chance to get reacquainted.
You don't want to know me.
Maybe not.
I'm a mess.
You're in a mess.
It's not your fault.
Who's talking about fault?
You didn't neglect me. You didn't know I had a son by you. I purposely dropped out of your sight so I could raise him myself.
I know.
I didn't need you then, and I don't need you now.
You needed me once, a little bit, for a few minutes.
I don't blame you for hating me. Doing this to me, wrecking Blythe's spirit with a stroke of your coaxial sword. You always know how to get back at people, don't you, Fletch?
I'm not getting back at you.
Of course you are. You found out about our son, Jack, that I had him and kept him from you, and in 4 days I'm lying here stranded, starving, mortified beyond belief.
That's okay, he said, as long as you're not indulging in self-pity. From the bed, she shot him a glance and half a smile. She said,
I'll bet you've even had breakfast.
On the plane to Chicago, he said, a coffee and muffin.
Coffee and muffin, she scoffed. What kind of a muffin?
Blueberry.
Call that breakfast?
Actually, no, Fletch answered. What I might call breakfast would be, let me see, a half a fresh chilled grapefruit,
Eggs scrambled with cream cheese, a steak medium rare, a few sticks of crisp bacon, home fried potatoes, maybe just a slice or two of summer sausage with fresh lemon juice.
Shut up!
Buttered toast with, let's see, strawberry preserves would be nice. Crystal's eyes were full on him.
You eat all that stuff for breakfast?
Are you going to get off that bed?
I can't you see?
I can see an enormously fat person lying on a bed in a fraudulent medical facility rapidly being closed by the authorities, whose sheets, blankets, reading lamp, and tissue box have been taken from her, who hints to me she is hungry but who isn't doing anything about her situation. Are you going to die there, Crystal? One thing I absolutely will not do for you is serve as your pallbearer. We'll have to plant you with a crane.
I have done something about it.
What have you done? Sent out for Chinese?
You're killing me.
You're killing yourself. What have you done to save yourself?
There's an ambulance coming for me.
You sent for it?
No.
An ambulance to take you where?
To the public hospital.
Crystal, the public cannot afford you. Not you and schools and the police and fire departments, too.
They'll probably put me in the psychiatric ward.
She sniffed. Her head was turned toward the window.
I can't afford myself.
Probably not.
I don't need you.
Okay.
I don't need you. I don't need Jack. I don't need anybody.
Fletch sighed.
Crystal, when I left here Sunday, I said I'd be back.
I'm back. If I leave here again, I won't be back.
Go.
I'll never enter this room again.
So go.
Fletch said, okay. He left.
Mortimer.
Hi, Mr. Mortimer. This is Fletch.
Who?
I am Fletcher.
Oh, no.
Did I call you at a bad time?
Yeah, I'm not dead yet.
How have you been otherwise? Fletch was using the phone in the handicap van. He had not left the front driveway of Blythe Spirit.
Well, enough to hang up on you.
Oh, don't do that.
Why not?
I might have something interesting to say.
You always do. That's why I'm hanging up. I'm too old to be interested in anything you had to say.
Come on now.
Last time I listened to you is how I got so old. I was a young man until then, with a full head of hair, a straight back and friends. I listened to you and my hair grayed and fell out, my gums sank, my back stooped, my skin wrinkled. I lost my way of making a living. I lost all my friends. All in 3 months I listened to you. I should listen to you again.
This time you might find it rejuvenating.
Sure, this time I'll end up wearing incontinence pads.
Hey, I...
No, hey, I nothing, Fletcher. You talked me into turning state's evidence. Everybody else, all my friends in the business, went to jail. I was sent to Wyoming for my own protection. Huh? I'd rather be in jail. I would have known what I was doing in jail. What am I doing in Wyoming? There would have been more people I know in jail. We would have had a lot to talk about. I don't know anybody in Wyoming. All the people here talk about is something they call beef cattle and the 12 deadly sins.
Seven.
Seven what?
I think it's considered there are only 7 deadly sins.
In Wyoming, they got 12.
It's a big state.
I can't figure out whether Wyoming is big or just empty.
Mr. Mortimer, you turned state's evidence after your best crack at a world middleweight championship got impaled on an iron railing in Gramercy Park.
I did take that hard, yes. I loved that boy.
You can write letters to your friends you put in jail.
I do, a few of them. The good guys, you know. Those crooks who say, no hard feelings for ruining my family and sending me to jail for the rest of my life. Those I trust not to send a hitman after me. With those I correspond weekly. Tell them all about my great life spent watching the mountains in Wyoming not move.
So, what's so bad about semi-retiring to the beautiful state of Wyoming? You're 72.
74, thanks to you. If I never met you, I'd still be 47, probably.
Not likely. Jake Berger tells me you're training 2 new contenders.
Beef cattle. 2-legged beef cattle. That's all they have out here, beef cattle. 4-legged beef cattle, 2-legged beef cattle.
If you don't have hope for them, you wouldn't be training them.
Beef cattle marked USDA. In this case,
USDA means you should see how dumb they are. Maybe they'll win at the county fair. Not even in their weight class. How old are they, 20?
16, 18. I won't live long enough to see either of them snooze on the canvas for the count of 10.
I'll bet they're good. The older one, the 18-year-old Hadja, he calls himself, thinks getting mad at himself is the point of the game. He'd knock himself out if I ever showed him how. The other one, the 16-year-old Ricky, actually thinks his muscles are pretty, if you'd believe it.
Doesn't every 16-year-old?
The only opponent that interests him is in the mirror. And he likes him too much to get close, even though they're both wearing deodorant. Can you believe that? Ever hear of a boxer who insists on wearing underarm in the ring?
Sounds like a good idea to me.
I keep saying, why do I smell petunias in here? Phew!
Sparring, which one usually wins?
Neither of them. The young one keeps dancing like a city boy barefoot on a hot pavement so his pretty face won't get hit. The other one keeps getting so mad at himself for not connecting with the younger one that he bursts his own blood vessels. I tell you no lie.
I'd like to drive out to look at them.
No, sir, don't waste my time.
And bring a lady with me.
Don't waste your time driving out here from wherever you are. Even if you're right at my front gate, I won't have you.
She's a heavyweight.
No, sir, not at my camp.
She needs training.
No, sir, I'm not ready for that. I never will be. Not in my camp.
I've seen those magazines.
We'll see you in a few days.
You will not? You show up here, Fletch, and I'll sick my two fighters on you, both Hadja and Ricky, at the same time.
That's no threat. You'd better believe it is.
Nah, Fletch said. You've already told me their flaws.
Fletch remained in the van's driver's seat. The two attendants he had tipped rolled Crystal Faeone in an oversized wheelchair onto the hydraulic lift on the side of the van. He listened to the sound of the lift raising Crystal. The van tipped with her weight. In the back of the van, they helped Crystal onto the large bed. The head of the bed was behind Fletch's seat. They rolled the wheelchair back onto the lift and Fletch lowered it, and them, then raised the lift again and folded it within the van. They slid the van's side door closed. One of the attendants looked through the van's open window.
Okay, buddy, get her out of here.
Slowly, Fletch drove the van along the driveway of Blythe Spirit. There were still many vehicles in the driveway. Entering the road, he turned right toward the highway. He heard Crystal sniffing. She blew her nose. Somewhere she must have found a box of tissues. On the highway, he accelerated. Crystal asked,
"Where are you taking me?"
"Wyoming." There was a long pause.
"Fletch? Is that you, Fletch?"
"You were expecting Karen, maybe?"
"I thought you left."
"I said I wouldn't return to your room, argue with you anymore."
"You always leave."
"Not if anyone really wants me." "You didn't really want me to leave, did you?"
"No,"
she laughed.
"What's in Wyoming?"
"Not much, according to Mr. Mortimer."
"Who's Mr. Mortimer?"
"A cranky old man named Mortimer, who has always insisted everybody call him Mister."
"A friend of yours?"
"Yeah, he hates me. He's sure to hate you, too."
"Then why are we going there?"
"Best idea I've got. He probably doesn't realize it, but he's been adjusting people's weight all his life. He's a trainer for boxers."
"A boxing coach?"
"Yeah."
"You're taking me to a training camp for boxers?"
"Yeah, I thought we'd try it. If that doesn't work, we'll try something else. You wouldn't mind developing your uppercut, would you?"
"What's an uppercut?"
"A slash over the eyebrow."
"I don't want any of those."
"The head of your bed raises and lowers."
"Oh, yeah."
He heard the electric motor raise the head of her bed. "You can see out the windows. Nice scenery."
"Yeah, the back of billboards."
"All the fronts say is Keep America Beautiful."
"Geez,"
Crystal said.
"He wants to turn me into a boxing champion."
"Hey, lady," Fletch said, "in your weight class, you're a shoo-in."
"Fletch, can we stop so you can get me something to eat?"
"Sure," Fletch said. "I'm hungry, too."
"If I'm going to take up boxing," Crystal said, "I'll need to keep my strength up."
Chapter 5. The woman in the black bikini who came to swim in the Olympic-sized outdoor pool kept glancing at Jack. Dressed only in the white shorts with vertical blue side stripes he had been given and told to wear as a condition of his employment, Jack was cleaning the pool.
At each end of the pool as she swam laps, she managed to roll her eyes up for another look at him. Jack had been told there were many conditions of his employment at Vindemia. Arriving in that area of Georgia, he was surprised to learn that the village of Vindemia was on the estate of Vindemia itself, and one needed a pass to visit even the village. The 3,500-acre estate was entirely surrounded by chain-link fence. There was only one entrance, and that was guarded. Before he left Virginia, spending some of his earnings from Global Cable News, Jack bought some clothes and a used blue Miata convertible. On his way to Georgia, he had stopped at Subs Rosa in North Carolina for eat-in and take-out. The town nearest Vindemia was Ronkton. There he had lunch in a coffee shop. He asked if there were any jobs to be had in the area. The woman behind the counter said, "Only on the estate, really," and sent him to an accountant's office down the street. "You should just fit the bill," the estate's accountant, Clarence Downs, said at first sight of Jack. He had just returned from lunch. "Come in and sit down. Let's talk." In his office, sitting behind his desk, Downs's first question was, "Ever been in prison?" "No, sir." "We'll check on it." "Sure." "Any diseases?" "I had chicken pox when I was a kid. I'm better now, thank you." "Can you swim?" Smiling with approval, the heavy man had already surveyed Jack's body. "Yes, sir." "Sure you can. Play tennis?" "Yes, sir." "Any good?" "I'm very big with the rackets." Downs grinned. "What are you, taking time off from college?" "Trying to raise some money, sir." "Sure, I got two kids of my own in college. Good thing I'm a certified public accountant. Damn all, the bills never stop. I've never had to juggle my personal accounts before I had two kids in college at the same time. Where are your folks, John?"
"My mother has a medical problem, sir. My father has a small farm."
"I see. You're not much on farm laboring, I expect. It's dry work, all right. I escaped a farm when I was a kid." The man slapped the side of his stomach. "I wanted to wear a white shirt and have a gut." He laughed. "See, I'm a success."
"Yes, sir."
The man frowned a little at Jack's agreement. "So, the job's on the Vindemia estate. You know about it? Owned and closely operated by Dr. Chester Radley. So big it just about drives the whole economy around here. They need a young man, presentable is the description I was given, to keep the swimming pools, tennis courts, gymnasium clean, act as lifeguard when necessary, you know, if there are little kids around, be able to partner at tennis when someone who wants to play doesn't have a partner, help the gardeners out when necessary, help patrol the grounds when necessary."
"Patrol the grounds?"
"Yeah, Dr. Radley is a nut on security."
"You mean with a gun and a dog?"
"And walkie-talkie. Can you handle that?"
"I guess."
"And when required, if there's a big party going on or something, put on a white jacket and help serve drinks, whatever."
"Do I get paid extra for smiling?"
More slowly, Downs said, "And report to Dr. Radley's secretary anything you see that strikes you as out of the ordinary."
"What does that mean?"
"I tell you, Dr. Radley is a nut on security. He likes to know everything about what everybody is doing, saying."
He shrugged his shoulders.
"He's just funny that way."
"Spy on the guests, family?"
"There are conditions to your employment."
Downs put on his glasses and referred to a list that seemed a permanent part of his desktop.
"You will not be allowed to smoke, drink, or use other drugs, illegal substances, of course, or bring them onto the estate. Okay so far?"
"How about bubble gum?"
"The estate's colors are blue and white. We give you the clothes to wear, and you wear them. You don't wear any other clothes while you're on the estate, even if and when off duty. Got that?"
"Okay, but no tutus."
"Old man Radley runs that estate like a 19th century British man of war."
"What happened to the last guy who had this job?"
"Two empty beer cans were found in the wastebasket in his room."
"For that he was fired?"
"Instantly."
"Not hung from the yardarm?"
"You are not to bring personal guests onto the estate. You are not to bring a woman to your quarters. Even if you help a woman guest in the gym or play tennis with her, you are not to develop a personal relationship with her."
"Phew. Why doesn't old Radley run the estate with robots?"
"I think he would if he could. You live in half of a divided cottage, your own room, bath, and kitchenette. It is expected you will do all your food shopping at the estate general store in the village of Vindemia."
"I'm expected to sell my soul to the company store?"
"It's not a bad deal, really. The store on the estate is non-profit.
You buy retail at wholesale prices. Plus, Dr. Radley himself has checked the nutritional value of all the food sold, for example. It's the best. No junk food? No, potato chips. He likes potato chips himself. You may use the gymnasium, pool, etc., but not while a member of the family or guest is using them. Unless you have an explicit reason for being someplace, if a member of the family or a guest appears, you are to disappear. You have a car? Yes. When you arrive, you will park it in the locked compound and turn over your keys. Radley doesn't want unnecessary traffic on the estate. Bicycles are available. You'll have from midnight Wednesday until midnight Thursday off. If you choose to leave the estate during that time, of course your car will be made available to you. This is Thursday. So it is. Downs told Jack the rate of pay. He began to hand Jack a closely printed sheet of paper. Is all this agreeable to you? Where do I sign? After a little more paperwork with Clarence Downs, Jack drove to the estate. The erections holding the wrought iron gates to the estate were 35 meters high. Stucco walls 10 meters high extended out of sight in each direction. The gatehouse itself was as big as a suburban executive mansion. Is this the Magic Kingdom? Jack asked the blue and white uniformed guard. You almost got it right, the guard said. You got a pass? Yeah. Jack handed the guard his laminated pass. Winnie the Pooh dropped his. Jack's pass was pink, Downs had told him, to identify him as an employee. At least a mile ahead of him on the rise, the roofs and other parts of the main house were visible. The roofs were blue tile. In the sunlight, the white walls of the house gleamed like an actor's teeth. Several huge blue and white flags, visible even from that distance, flew in the breeze above the roofs. The guard gave him directions to the car compound. Go directly there, he said. I'm phoning ahead. They'll expect you within 6 minutes. Do not drive over 30 miles an hour. What do I do about the car's exhaust? The guard grinned. Bag it. Driving the smooth road, landscaped both sides, Jack remembered his conversation with Global Cable News' assistant to the chief executive officer, Alex Blair. Jack had said he was not married or otherwise entangled and was free to go abroad. Entering Vindemia, he felt as if he had entered a foreign country. Very foreign. He had entered the sort of world God might have created if he had money, to use an old wheeze. A car, the likes of which Jack had never seen before, passed him coming from the main house. It was a chauffeur-driven extended infinity. An older woman in a picture hat sat alone in the back seat. She held a handkerchief to her nose. Was she weeping? The limousine oozed along silently at exactly 30 miles an hour. Woo, Jack said to himself. Around here I'd better not accept any apples from women, or I just might end up somewhere well east of here. Having finished her laps in the pool, the girl in the black bikini swam to the pool edge near Jack. She folded her arms on the pool edge. She rested her chin on her forearms. She had coal-black hair, very wide-set coal-black eyes. Standing on the edge of the pool, Jack was vacuuming the pool's bottom with a long, wide hose. Already he was tired of hearing the huge flags over the main house cracking in the wind. There was no one else in the pool area. She said, "Hi." Hello, miss. Let me see the back of your leg. Do I have to do that, too? Turn around. He turned around. He knew she was looking for the small blue eye tattooed on the calf of his left leg just below the knee. I thought you looked familiar. I am, miss. Some people say much, too. After watching him another minute, she lifted herself out of the pool.